Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with increasing concern at the White House and among the Joint Chiefs that Israel is preparing to take military action against Iran in spite of US objections. We will look into Israeli covert activity that harms US interests with an historian specializing in intelligence, Mark Perry. He has an article at Foreign Policy, False Flag, that reveals how Mossad agents posed as CIA officers to recruit terrorists who killed Iranian soldiers and civilians. Then finally, we'll be joined by Thomas Frank, the author of the new book, Pity the Billionaire, The Hard Time Swindle and the Unlikely Comeback of the Right, which examines how the worst economy since the 1930s that crashed under George W. Bush brought about a revival of conservatism. Joining us now is Mark Perry, an author and historian specializing in military, foreign affairs, and intelligence analysis. His books include Conceived in Liberty, A Fire in Zion, and most recently, Talking to Terrorists, Why America Must Engage with Its Enemies. He is the recipient of both the 1995 National Jewish Book Award and the prestigious Project Censured Award. He has an article at Foreign Policy, False Flag, which reveals a series of CIA memos that describe how Israeli Mossad agents posed as American spies to recruit members of the terrorist organization Jundala to fight their covert war against Iran. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mark Perry.
It's good to be here.
And the Wall Street Journal are reporting that U.S. defense leaders are increasingly concerned that Israel is preparing to take military action against Iran over U.S. objections. President Obama spoke by telephone on Thursday with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and the U.S. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Martin Dempsey, is going over to Israel to meet with top military officials this week. And I have to add to that list the recent condemnation of the bombing or the killing of the Iranian scientist by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who went out of her way to say the United States had nothing to do with it. So give me your assessment of friction, apparent friction, both public and behind the scenes between these two allies.
Well, I think we're in a very delicate situation internationally. Israel is very fearful that Iran poses an existential threat. On the other hand, it's very clear to me in talking to my contacts here in Washington, especially in the military, that we do not want a conflict. The United States and Israel are allies, but as is the case with all alliances, there's arguments, internal arguments, sometimes very serious ones, and we're in that period now where Israel wants to move quickly, feels threatened. We are arguing they're not threatened. We need sanctions to work and diplomacy to work, and we don't see particularly eye to eye on this.
Well, my understanding is that there have been talks going on between high-level State Department officials in Turkey. In other words, following the president's signature on New Year's Eve of the National Defense Authorization Act that ramps up sanctions against Iran, that was largely pushed through by Republicans, but it was overwhelmingly supported. And the president wanted some flexibility, particularly because he was afraid that pushing Iran to the wall would raise the price of gasoline in an election year. So it seems like both sides are trying to walk back a little bit from, and the Iranians, of course, have been quite provocative with their exercises in the Straits of Hormuz and their statements about closing them. My understanding is that these meetings have been taking place in Turkey, where they're walking back. Larijani, the head of the speaker, who's close to the supreme leader, showed up at these meetings. And coinciding with that was the killing of the Iranian scientist, which is perhaps explains Hillary Clinton's anger, and there's a feeling that maybe the Israelis were trying to scuttle diplomacy. What's your reading on that?
Yeah, there is a widespread feeling in Washington that the Israelis are moving too quickly and trying to scuttle diplomacy. I don't have the same amount of confidence as a lot of people here in town that these talks or purported talks in Turkey are going to lead anywhere. It's always been difficult for the United States talk to the Iranians, and that's not all on us. The Iranians have shown some hesitation to talk, and there's at least presumptive evidence that they're moving forward on some kind of a nuclear program, perhaps not yet a nuclear weapon, which scares the Israelis. Listen, I come back to the kind of the bottom line here, which is the United States is doing everything it can to reach some kind of an accommodation short of war. The president is worried about gas prices, but he's also worried that, as we all know, once a war starts, you never know where it's going to end. It's going to cost American lives in all probability and Israeli lives. And there's no guarantee here that we're going to win a war. We thought that in Iraq, and it went on for 7 years. We don't want to go through that experience again. Our economy is not in shape to take this kind of a confrontation. I think that there's all kinds of efforts being made here to step back from the brink on the part of the United States and Iran. That's not so clear with Israel.
So what about a possibility, and I don't mean to be conspiratorial, Mark Perry, but there have been incidents in recent history during an election year where the government that wants to get into power manipulates things behind the scenes. Henry Kissinger met with Madam Chiang Kai-shek, who persuaded the South Vietnamese to walk out of peace talks, which clearly, had they made a deal to end the Vietnam War under Johnson, would have helped the election of Humphrey, and instead Nixon was elected, and there was this so-called October surprise scenario where Bill Casey supposedly made some contacts with Iranians. That was never thoroughly proven. However, there was an awful lot of smoke, if not fire. Is it possible that Netanyahu, who was very close to the Republicans, and after all, they were the ones who pushed through this National Defense Authorization Act, although the Democrats did sign it, of course. Is there any possibility that there could be some meddling in this election to help a Romney?
Well, I don't mean to be conspiratorial either. What you have just laid out is a very plausible scenario. The other plausible scenario, however, seems to contradict it, that wars are always good for incumbent presidents who are seen to be strong and resolute, and in this case, Mr. Obama would be seen to be pro-Israeli. I think when you sit down to do these calculations, if you're political leaders and you don't know how things are going to turn out, it seems more plausible to me that the calculation would be, let's not do anything. We're going to win this election anyway, Mr. Obama would say. And why do that? And if you're president of the United States and you're sitting in the White House and you're talking about a regional conflict and the deaths of American men and women in combat.
And the price of gas getting up to $10 a gallon.
Price of gas getting up to $10. I think that your political calculations on your list of important things to do is very, very, it might not even be on the list. Preventing war might be number one on the list if you're Barack Obama. And it might be number one on the list if you're Mitt Romney, because he knows a war conducted by an incumbent president elects and reelects an incumbent president, as was the case with John Kerry and George Bush in that election. When was it? 2004.
Right. Let's get into your article, Mark Perry. This is a pretty shocking story, and your sources in the CIA, a couple of whom are still in there and several who were in there recently, are pretty mad at the Israelis. I mean, they are fuming simply because it's okay if the Israelis want to, this is quoting them, it's okay if the Israelis want to shed blood, but it would help a lot if it was their blood and not ours. And there are a lot of people now, important people in Washington, who think that the Israelis are supposed to be a strategic asset. Well, guess what? There's a lot of people now who think that's just not true. So give me a sense of this civil war.
Shocking story, and it has gotten a lot of attention. And in 250 words or less, let me kind of lay it out. It's that in the 2007 and 2008 period, Israeli Mossad operatives recruited the terrorist group Jandullah, which is an anti-Iranian terrorist group, to conduct operations against Iran. That's okay if Israel wants to do that. But what they did was the Israeli Mossad agents posed as CIA officers. In one case, they used U.S. passports and U.S. money in their meetings with Jundala operatives. The CIA found out about it, wrote a report on it, went to the top of the agency, went into the White House, and the president was really angered about it.
George W. Bush.
But in the end, probably because of bureaucratic inertia, did nothing. When Obama came into office, he immediately put Jundala on the foreign terrorist organizations list and the State Department list. That's the sum of the story. It has caused the fact that Israeli Mossad officers were posing as CIA officers, which is a red line for the United States. We just don't want them to do that. The fact that they did that has a tendency to draw us into their conflict. And it paints us with a brush of supporting a foreign terrorist organization, which our government doesn't do. Now, you can agree or disagree with our government's tactics in sending drones into Pakistan, for instance, but at least we're fighting terrorism, not supporting terrorism. The Jundala operation that Israel conducted that was going to paint us into a corner as a state supporter of terrorism, which was just an absolute red line that no president would ever approve of or look on with any sympathy whatsoever. And Bush was really angry about it, but as I say, nothing was done then.
Well, but isn't it even worse, in a sense, in terms of spycraft and relations with allies, that these meetings with the Mossad officers posing as CIA operatives with the Jundala officials took place in London?
One of them that we know of took place in London, but that's absolutely right. You're absolutely right. The other took, there was at least one in Casablanca in Morocco, two or three in Pakistan, one purportedly in Afghanistan, well, that's not clear. They were monitored by us. We learned about them through a complaint from the London CIA station in London. It's clear to me that we intervened with the Pakistanis to arrest and to turn over to Iran the head of Jundala, who was then executed. It's a hell of a story, to be honest with you. And it took me 18 months to write, but it's a very intriguing story of a byplay between Israel and the United States that the public doesn't often see.
And this obviously would have caused frictions with Pakistani officials and the U.S. and the military and the ISI, because Jundala are a radical Sunni group killing Shiites. And, of course, this goes on all the time in Pakistan. It just happened today with a bombing at a Shiite shrine. What was the fallout between the U.S. and the ISI? Because the Iranians were blaming the Pakistanis, weren't they?
Yes, they were. That's exactly right. There was a real problem between the United States and Pakistan, because Pakistan's question to us was, why are you supporting a terrorist group that's operating on our soil? And it caused some real discomfort in the United States, because we were at the time, during the Bush administration, trying to build a very strong relationship with Pakistan. And the answer from the Bush administration was, we don't have anything to do with this. This is not ours. And when Pakistan arrested the head of Jundala and was going to turn him over to Iran, they kind of questioned us as to whether that was okay to do, and we had no objections. We sided with Pakistan, basically, and against Israel on this. It caused a lot of problems. And these kinds of operations, these false flag operations, where intelligence officers pose as belonging to a different country, are extremely dangerous and can draw countries like the United States into conflicts that we don't want. Thankfully, it didn't come close to that then during the Bush administration. But you have to wonder, you know, in the most recent assassination of the Iranian scientists, the Iranians automatically blamed the United States. And frankly, we didn't have anything to do with that. I believe Leon Panetta and Hillary Clinton are absolutely right. We condemned the killing, and we said in public and very strongly, as you pointed out in your introduction of me, we objected very strongly to this and condemned it.
We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back in a moment continuing the conversation with Mark Perry. Thank you.
take piano painting, lock it up and leave? Do you really think you can just put it in a safe behind a painting, lock it up and leave? Walk away now, and you're gonna start a war.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. So in your article, Mark Perry, again, at Foreign Policy, False Flag, that you say that when Bush found out about that Mossad agents were posing as CIA agents to recruit Jindallah terrorists and implicate the U.S. in terrorism and assassination, which is illegal, there was a huge rift in the White House between, I guess, the neocons in Dick Cheney's National Security Council were opposed, or the real National Security Council under Bush that was even smaller than Dick Cheney's National Security Council. There was a battle between those two.
Yeah, let me add a little bit of a caveat here, and it's going to be surprising to you as it was to me. There was a rift in the White House. On the one side were those supporters of Israel who argued, well, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And those who said, on the other side, who said, absolutely not. We cannot be seen to support a terrorist organization. We don't care what Israel does. Now, the guy who was really, my information is that some of the people that we might believe are neocons and have been painted as neocons, at least some of them came over to the side of, we can't participate in this, no matter what Israel does. There was even a split in the neoconservative community inside the national security establishment about this, because while they support Israel, and by the way, President Bush, as you know, was one of the strongest supporters of Israel we've ever had in this country as president, there was a line that was crossed here. It's one thing to be supportive and pro-Israel, and it's another thing to endorse an operation that harms your own country. And some very key neoconservatives were on the other side of this argument, arguing we can't allow Israel to do this. So, you know, while the details of who those people were in the White House on either side of the argument is not in the article, because I just can't nail it totally, it's very clear to me that there were splits in the neoconservative community also.
So, Mark Perry, and of course, the U.S. still, there's still support, is there not, for MEC, the Mujahideen al-Haq? That's a lot of that's come from the neoconservative quarters.
Absolutely right. And I think it's embarrassing that former national security officials and neoconservatives in this country would show up at a conference of the Mujahideen al-Khalq, which is on the foreign terrorist organization list and is a terrorist organization, that Americans would seem to be associated with this, and important Americans, I think is an embarrassment to this country and contradicts what we've been trying to do in the war on terrorism. If I had any kind of influence at all, I'd stand up and condemn them. But, what we need are people in the administration who will say this is unacceptable and not allowed. But there's no question, the MEK, a notorious anti-Iranian terrorist organization, is supported by some very prominent neoconservatives and even by some mainstream, albeit pro-Israel, conservatives in the country. And as I say, it's an embarrassment.
So, Mark Perry, just back to Israel's point of view, which is that they feel that Tehran has crossed an Israeli red line with their announcement they're going to be enriching uranium to 20% at this underground nuclear facility near the holy city of Qom. The Russians even came out against it, by the way. What's happening now in Israel indicates that Israel is preparing. There's a big exercise going on now called Austere Challenge 12 with the U.S. and Israel, apparently designed to intercept a barrage of Hezbollah missiles that they expect in terms of asymmetrical warfare. If Israel would attack Iran, Iran would use Hezbollah to retaliate against Israel. They're shutting down the Dimona nuclear reactor, which, by the way, during the first Gulf War, Saddam Hussein fired several salvos of Scud missiles at Dimona. And the U.S. apparently is making contingency plans to fortify the embassy in Baghdad, which they feel that Iranian-backed militias in Iraq could retaliate against.
Yes, I I visit the Middle East often, and I visit Israel often. And the last time I was there, I sat and talked with several, let me describe them as policymakers, very senior. And I think that we have to acknowledge Israel's concerns here. We can't just, toss them off as irrational. It's not. If you're the Prime Minister of Israel and you're sitting in your office in Jerusalem, you view yourself as kind of not just the defender of Israel and the insurer of its future existence, but as they feel, as kind of the political leader of the Jewish people. And if you feel, considering history here very carefully, if you feel that your country's existence is in danger and that not just Israel but the Jewish people are about to be attacked, it puts you in a very different kind of mindset. And I think that understanding that and acknowledging it has to make us acknowledge that Israel does feel threatened and something must be done. The question is, what? And it is not the case that a war is necessarily the best thing that can happen here, despite Israel's legitimate, I think, security concerns. They're extremely worried, and their worries can't be passed off. The question for us, and I think the attempt by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs in his visit to Israel this coming week will be, listen, we have your back, but don't do anything precipitous. Let's try to solve this some other way and give it a little bit more time. We're not ignoring your concerns at all, but war is not always the best option, and we're not at that point yet. I think that's the message he's taking to Israel.
Well, I think going back, Mark Perry, to the NDAA, it's pretty clear that came about, at least my assumption is that in many ways that came about, again, pushed by largely by Senators McCain and Lindsey Graham, but voted for by a vast majority of Democrats, which would indicate, I think, the power of the Israeli lobby, that that Israel was basically using leverage of a threat to attack Iran as a way to get these stronger sanctions. So it seems extraordinary to me that the Israelis are actually getting what they wanted, and that's still not good enough for them.
Well, I think that your supposition as a supposition is correct. The Israel lobby is very strong, and the inclination of the Senate and the Congress in general is to support Israel unflinchingly. What's interesting about the current situation is that while the Congress might be that way, if you go into the policymaking establishment in the United States, that is to say, people who aren't elected but have been in their intelligence or defense jobs for 30 years and know this stuff well, Israel is not that deeply supported. There's a real rift inside of our own government where the Congress is, let's go, Israel's threatened, and the CIA, Defense Department, and State Department are saying, let's pull back the horses here. We're galloping a little bit too fast. There is that dynamic that we have to take into account.
What is your sense then how the Obama administration is going to kind of handle this, because it's got to be a nightmare for them that they apparently still have not gotten assurances out of Israel that they won't attack. He tried to water down the NDAA, giving him some flexibility about the price of oil. Apparently, the U.S. on the one hand, I mean, it appears that we're doing a two-track thing. Tim Geithner's running around the world trying to get customers of Iranian oil to stop buying it, and apparently succeeded in getting the Japanese to stop buying it. They failed with the Indians. I don't know how they're doing with the South Koreans, and the Chinese want no part of it. So give us a sense of is that just the two-track that, in order to make the sanctions work, in order to get diplomacy, you have to put the screws on with sanctions?
Yeah, well, two tracks is right. I think that there's a, in this sense, we're preparing for the worst, but we're working hard to prevent it. And we're protecting ourselves on these two tracks by running around the world getting support for sanctions at the same time that we're running around the world making sure that everyone has enough supply of oil in case the worst case happens. I wish I had a crystal ball, and I keep trying to find a historical metaphor that will explain very simply the current time, and everyone keeps saying August 1914, and I say no. In August 1914, all these young men in Europe were happy to go to the recruiting stations to fight a war. That's not true now. Nobody really wants this. And what is disturbing is that despite no one really wanting this, it keeps creeping closer and closer. And I think that this is what really frightens the Obama administration and why we're seeing these high-level delegations traveling into the Middle East to try to calm everything down. And I think that the current situation will turn on whether those delegations are successful in calming fears and pulling back. They might not be, in which case, sadly and tragically, we would have a war.
Well, clearly, I mean, just in closing, Mark, isn't there fairly obvious evidence that the Republicans are stepping over each other, presidential candidates? They're almost stepping over each other to be the first to bomb Iran. And is that just, their, way to have a more robust, manly foreign policy, if you will? Or do they know something? In other words, are they...
I think it's funny. I'm always shocked, and I'm not a naive person, but I'm always shocked when it seems that every Republican candidate, with the exception of Ron Paul, seems intent at some point during any debate or public talk to say how much they like Israel. I would have thought that it would be a requirement for a candidate for president to love their own country, and to say that. I think for the Republican candidates, it's funding, because there's a lot of pro-Israel money, and because they feel that they can chip away at the Jewish American vote that has traditionally gone for the Democrats and especially for Obama. I don't think they can do that, but that's certainly one of their strategies. To more directly answer your questions and to confirm, I think, what is clearly your own feelings, it's irresponsible to do it, to bang the table and say, let's have a war, on the assumption that somehow you're going to win it and it's not going to cost very much. That might not be the case. And this will come back to haunt people if there is a war. People will stand up in this country and say, what are our political leaders doing? We had a war in Iraq. We're having one in Afghanistan. They didn't turn out well. They're not turning out well. And now we had another one. I think it's playing with fire, and I think it's very dangerous.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, Mark Perry.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Mark Perry, an author and historian specializing in military foreign affairs and intelligence analysis. His books include Conceived in Liberty, A Fire in Zion, and most recently, Talking to Terrorists, Why America Must Engage with Its Enemies. He's a recipient of both the 1995 National Jewish Book Award and the prestigious Project Censored Award. He has an article at Foreign Policy, False Flag, which reveals a series of CIA memos that describe how Israeli Mossad agents posing as American spies recruited members of the terrorist organization Jundallah to fight their covert war against Iran. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back in a moment straight to Thomas Frank, the author of the new book, Pity the Billionaire, The Hard Time Swindle, and The Unlikely Comeback of the Right.